Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning and welcome to Africa Link on this Thursday, the 8th of October. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the opposition in Guinea say they will be participating in Sunday's presidential elections. This analyst is cautiously optimistic.
I think the elections will be cleaner than the elections of 2010, which were basically the first proper democratic elections Guinea had ever held.
Rebels in South Sudan, led by Riek Machar, threaten to return to war after President Salva Kiir orders the subdivision of the country into yet more regional states.
I wouldn't be surprised if Kiir resorted to fighting unless Salva Kiir reverses this decision or enters into a negotiation about it.
And another opportunity to hear this week's instalment in our series, The Crossroads Generation. Stay tuned.
Top story.
The opposition in the West African nation of Guinea have said they will participate in Sunday's presidential election, while cautioning that what they call dysfunctional aspects of the voting process must be addressed. Earlier, the opposition had called for the vote to be postponed until later in the month to allow the Election Commission time to correct anomalies in the electoral roll. In a sign of mounting tension ahead of the poll, clashes between supporters of the ruling party and opposition activists left more than 80 people wounded last week. This report by Dirka Kopp has been adapted for Africa Link by Jane Ayeko.
The election in Guinea-Conakry is barely a week away. This has thwarted people's hope in them. Earlier on, the opposition had threatened to boycott the election. They later demanded a postponement, claiming that there were mistakes in the electoral register. Vincent Foscher, a Guinea expert in the International Crisis Group, supports this call.
When you see for how many months this election has provoked controversy, demonstrations, violence, and arrest, then the idea of postponing it for a few days does not seem unreasonable.
The opposition now says it's ready to participate even if the election is not postponed. Elections in Guinea are often marred by serious errors and anomalies. At a press conference, a representative of the United Opposition stressed the wish for a free, transparent and credible election. In 2010 and 2013, the opposition was skeptical about the election outcome. Many voters think that this election will not be different from the previous. In Guinea, the election campaign is often marred by violence, but this time, a group of Guinean comedians want to stop this. They have produced a play that illustrates the dangers of escalating tensions. Balia Ba is the author and director of the play. He explains what inspired him.
On sait très bien qu'on s'achemine assez rapidement d'ailleurs vers les élections.
The elections are coming up, and there are already tensions. It is therefore important to demonstrate the dangers of violence to the people so that they can reconsider their actions.
Après le spectacle, ils puissent réfléchir pour éviter le pire.
Bar is not alone in the campaign against violence. A group of young bloggers are also trying to get the message across through an internet platform known as guineavote.com. People can report any irregularities and acts of violence. Faude Koyate, one of the initiators, reports that the initiative wants to send 215 election observers to the whole country.
And that report was written by Dirka Kopp. For more analysis of the political situation in Guinea, my colleague Isaac Mugabe turned to Paul Melly, Associate Fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK. He began by asking him whether these elections were going to be free and fair.
I think the elections will be cleaner than the elections of 2010 when President Condé was first elected, which were basically the first proper democratic elections Guinea had ever held and were seriously marked by organizational problems and quite a lot of intimidation of some voters. This time the conditions seem to be a bit better. There's been a lot of international attention and pressure on all sides to take part in the contest. And there seems to be a sense, a general mood around the election seems to be a little more secure and less marred by intimidation and mobilization of ethnic mistrust, which were the problems that really scarred the elections of 5 years ago.
If the conditions are better, like you've mentioned, then why is the opposition worried?
Because we're still in a situation of mistrust. The conditions still won't be perfect. Inevitably, President Condé enjoys the advantages of incumbency. He has been in power for the last 5 years. That means that he has had the power to spend money, do things that the public may notice, as it were, be seen to be acting in government.
How big a challenge does Alpha Condé face on Sunday? I mean, who is his main rival?
Alpha Condé's main rival is perceived to be Selou Dalla Diallo, who was the runner-up in the last election. And in some respect, Diallo's position has improved since then, when he only lost narrowly by several percent. This time, Diallo has cultivated an alliance. And a further complication this time is that Sidya Touré, who is a former prime minister and who leads the UFR, the third largest party in Guinea, is no longer in alliance with Diallo. He had been a close ally of Diallo for quite a few years, but after Diallo decided to reach this agreement with the former dictator Dadis Camara, Sidya Touré disassociated himself from all that and is standing very much as an individual. No one can be sure, if Sidya Touré comes third, who in the first round, who he will back in the final runoff vote. And Sidya Touré is very popular, particularly in Conakry City and in places on the coast, which account for a significant voting weight. He may not have enough natural support in the interior regions to win, though that can't be totally excluded, but his support will be quite crucial if the election goes to the second round.
Paul Mallet from Chatham House.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In South Sudan, rebels led by Riek Machar have warned the government that they risk a return to war because they're undermining a recent peace deal. The warning came after President Salva Kiir ordered that the number of regional states that make up the country be nearly tripled from 10 to 28. International backers of the peace deal, including Britain, Norway and the United States, said the move directly contradicts the South Sudanese government's commitment to the agreement signed in late August. My colleague Fred Mavuni has been talking to Magdi El-Ghazouli, a fellow of the Rift Valley Institute, and asked him what was behind Salva Kiir's decision.
During the negotiations for the IGAD, one of the demands that Riek Machar had was a federal arrangement for South Sudan, including a redivision of the states and the increase in number. And the SLA in opposition, Riek Machar's faction, have a certain plan, which they put forward before, during the negotiation, of how these states would look like. So this plan of the SLA generally reflects areas of influence that they have and their attempt to boost their areas of influence, which is largely the northern part, let's say the northeastern part of South. Salva Kiir is a counter proposal to the Riek Machar's proposal, with of course the advantage that it is a government decree and that he's trying to put that division into force and create an alternative power structure for himself that would restrict Riek Machar's position. Knowing, of course, that the Riek Machar's faction, according to the IGAD plus peace deal, would get the governorships of the three main states in northern southern Sudan, areas where most of the conflict is going on, then Nuer-dominated areas. And that redivision would make that very difficult because it wouldn't be clear where Riek Machar's governors would be then. What Kiir is doing is effectively unraveling the one very important provision of the peace agreement, which is granting Riek Machar's faction authority in the oil-dominated regions of northern South Sudan.
What are the implications of this seeming standoff between President Salva Kiir and the rebels?
Very, 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 very grave. I wouldn't be surprised if Riek resorted to fighting unless Salva Kiir reverses this decision or enters into a negotiation about it. Because it is effectively undermining the power sharing arrangement between the two.
Then what could be done to save this situation?
Well, the EU already issued a statement asking Salva to reverse his decision, although I'm not sure that is immediately possible. I think the best you can hope for is a return to the negotiation table, because obviously even during the signing, you might recall, and your listeners might recall, that Salva Kiir took more than a fortnight to think over whether he would sign or not. And there was considerable resistance inside the Juba camp against signing the peace deal. They thought, I think now they're calculating, oh, we signed it, now we can attempt to walk back from it.
Magdi El-Ghazouli, a fellow of the Rift Valley Institute, talking there to Fred Mavuni.
Harare, Nairobi or Abuja, Africa Link's correspondents bring Africa's stories to you.
To northern Ghana now, where in the Gwanja Kingdom, drums are a traditional, tried and tested means of communication. The talking drums, as they are called, are played to convene meetings or when a traditional leader passes away. Some people maintain that they are no longer fit for purpose and should be replaced by FM radio and social media. Traditionalists disagree, as Maxwell Souk reports.
Ahmed Swali beats his talking drum, a local communicating instrument, to invite community members for a meeting at a palace in Pembe, Northern Region. Swali is a chief drummer and tells me what his work is about.
I communicate what is happening. When the discussion is going on, I am the person who sometimes directs the way they should communicate. If I want the chief to talk, there's a way I would communicate to the chief through the talking drums.
Apart from singing appellations, the drums are used to make announcements when an important traditional leader dies or during war times.
If something bad happening, I will communicate. If something bad is happening, if an enemy is advancing, I will communicate. Somebody is coming, that person looks to be bad. I mean, if a warrior is coming, if a stranger is coming, if a military is coming, I communicate to the chief.
This is a long-standing practice for many traditional jurisdictions in Ghana. The Gwanja Kingdom from Northern Region is one area this is widely practiced, but as the population of these communities rises, there are concerns that such an instrument cannot serve society equitably with information. Gladys Tang, acting regional director of the Center for National Culture in Tamale, thinks.
Those days, yes, the population was not big. The infrastructure, like housing and other things, were not like this. So they could do it effectively. These guys going around making noise were not there, and so it was effectively done.
Gladys wants the palaces to use modern technology in communicating, such as FM radio and social media, which can reach more people. But for Al Hassan, another talking drum beater, Gladys' suggestion is not possible.
Technology is there, but technology came and met tradition. So we don't have to do away with the tradition, despite all the technology that is coming.
A linguistic analyst and cultural enthusiast living in the town of Bope, A.R. Adam, also disagrees. According to him,
the talking drum have been an important element of our tradition, and it plays tunes that are dear to the heart of the people.
As long as chieftaincy remains paramount in Africa, symbols and communicating tools like this also remains tangible no matter the level of modernization.
Maxwell Souk reporting from northern Ghana. Time now to join the Crossroads generation.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome back to Crossroads Generation.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation. Our future starts today.
We're getting close to the end of this fourth season, facing new challenges. And we are glad you can join us for this 25th episode. With the help of their sister Mercy, the 12-year-old twins Kadu and Banda were recently awarded scholarships to attend Kisimba Special School. It is indeed special because it started an integrative program in which disabled and non-disabled children learn together. Kadu recently had an unfortunate encounter with a disabled girl, Noni, the sister of his young friend Summer, who is also epileptic.
Oh my God, Noni!
What? What is that? What's happening to her? I have to go. Bye.
Wait, Kadu, where are you going?
Thanks to the teacher Anita, Noni and Summer are now also at Kisimba Special School. So the three kids will probably meet again. The school has just recovered from a typhoid outbreak, a consequence of the devastating flood that hit Tandika. Many people died in the floods, among them Nikki's mother, Mrs. Jumbe, who was also Dan's business partner. Others have lost their homes and the streets are impassable. Dan is known for his commitment to the local environment, and in this episode he's speaking up on behalf of people who don't usually have a voice. Where is this? Let's find out in today's episode, Too Little, Too Late.
Please, fellow citizens, please listen. Please, settle down. Settle down, please. Please, let us try to understand each other so that we can offer some solutions. Okay? Please, look. We as the government have come here to talk about ways to prevent another disaster like this one. Or at least to be able to respond better. Okay, please. We need to listen to each other. If we just shout at each other, we won't make any progress. Please, please, calm down. Please, please. That's better. Now, can we have one person at a time? Yes? You.
Thank you, sir. My name is Dan. I am very disappointed in this government. We are all very disappointed.
Very disappointed. We don't pass in the first place. We don't think we have a government.
The government never listens to us. For a long time now, we've been asking it to move the Tandika garbage dump further away from the houses, but no one ever listens. We all know that one of the reasons Tandika flooded is because the dump is right where the drainage should be. The dump is a source of all the waterborne diseases we've been experiencing. A lot of people are now suffering from typhoid. Our government is very good at one thing, waiting. It waits until something actually happens, and then the politicians come bumping out here in their 4x4s to tell us they are sorry. But sorry won't bring back our children or our mothers and fathers who perished in the floods. The district commissioner is talking about solutions. Well, it's not like you don't know what they are, Mr. DC. In other countries, we hear they have early warning systems. Why don't we have them here? Other countries have rescue teams who are trained to handle situations like this. Why is it so difficult to have the same here?
Why?
And don't try and tell us there isn't any money. We know all about the expensive parties and foreign trips you and your officers have been taking at our expense.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mama Masi. Hi, Kadu. Hi, Banda.
Hi, Auntie Anita.
That's okay, Anita. We are grateful you could see us at all.
As Masi told you, the boys can come to our school now, and you won't have to pay any school fees.
Thank you so much, Anita.
As for you boys, you know this is a special school, right?
Yes, Auntie Anita.
That means you'll be meeting children who may not have all the advantages you have. You'll be courteous to them at all times.
Yes, Auntie.
And you'd better learn to address me as Teacher Anita.
Yes, Teacher.
Oh, and Kadu.
Yes?
You may already know that Sam and Noni go to school here too. Summer told me about what happened between the two of you.
I'm sorry, teacher.
Don't apologize to me. I expect you to apologize to Noni and Summer. Is that clear?
Yes, teacher.
Good. You can go to your classroom now.
Yes, teacher.
Wow, Dan, no one would think you had only just been discharged from hospital. You were really on fire in that meeting.
Yeah, with his crutches, I look like my grandpa. But I was so angry with them.
But aren't you afraid you might get into trouble? I don't know how it is in Laboria, but our government doesn't take kindly to criticism.
What can they do to me? I mean, I have no idea where my dad is. I've lost my business partner, Mrs. Jumbe. May she rest in peace. And that man just stands there on his high horse and talks about finding solutions.
Well, I hope he didn't take it too badly. I admire your commitment, but please don't go on a limb.
Don't worry, babe.
Oh, I just got a message from Anita. I have to run down. See you later.
Okay, see you later.
Mwah. I don't think anybody wants to listen to you, Anita. They would rather get on with the job.
Tina, I mean, it's quite understandable that they want to get rid of the garbage dump themselves after what's happened. I know they're angry. They've been begging the authorities to move it for years.
Exactly.
But why do they want to take all the waste? It doesn't make sense to act so hastily without thinking things through. They'll just end up creating the same problem in a different place.
You know, Anita, I'm kind of nervous about all this. It's like we've created a monster.
It's not a monster, Tina. It's a good thing that people have started getting involved. It means they've really understood that we really can change things. But you have to act in a well-thought-out way. Otherwise, we won't achieve our goals. It may take a bit longer to get there, but the outcome will be much more sustainable.
I know. But Dan won't listen to me. I'm afraid the police might get involved. And it...
Okay, listen up, people. Please listen. Please listen. Thank you, everybody. We really thank you for showing up in such large numbers to help move this dump. But if we don't stop now, we might all get into trouble with the police. And that... What good will it do us if we all get arrested? I'm not saying we should give up on moving the dump. On the contrary. But we need to think this through. We have to make a plan that can be a permanent solution.
But that's what we're doing.
Listen, we really share your frustration. And we don't have a plan we can just pull out of our hearts. But let's start working on one, together. We can talk to experts and organizations who have experience in dealing with waste disposal.
If we work like this, we'll end up with more than just a quick fix. We can create a long-term plan that will move the dump for good. I'm sure you've all got lots of good ideas. Yes.
Wow. Sounds like the environmental movement in Tandika is really gathering momentum. We have to end here for today, but how will the authorities react to Dan's outspoken criticism? And if you're still wondering where Dan's father is, join us next time to find out in the final episode of this season of Crossroads Generation. Till then, bye-bye and take care.
Our main stories before we leave you. Guinea's opposition candidates say they will participate in the first round of presidential elections this Sunday, despite fears of irregularities. And rebels in South Sudan threaten to return to war after President Salva Kiir orders the number of regional states in the country to be tripled from 10 to 28. We welcome your comments on this programme, either in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, an SMS to country code 49 160 957 595 10, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and goodbye.